Hello, everyone. At the end of the Seventh Knight's story, we went as far as the point where the ensorcelled prince was telling us his story, and it ended exactly when he brought down his sword on the neck of his wife's lover, and he thought that he had killed him. But exactly at this point, Shahrazad stopped telling us the rest of the story, and it remained for tonight, the Eighth Knight. So let's get to it. When it was the Eighth Knight, she continued, "It hath reached me, O auspicious king, that the young and ensorcelled prince said to be the king, when I smote the slave with intent to strike off his head, I thought that I had slain him, for he groaned a loud hissing groan. But I had cut only the skin and flesh of the gullet and the two arteries." How specific. I thought maybe when you cut arteries, the person would die, but "it awoke the daughter of my uncle. So I sheathed the sword and fared forth for the city. And entering the palace, lay upon my bed and slept till morning, when my wife aroused me and I saw that she had cut off her hair and had donned mourning garments. Quoth she, 'O son of my uncle, blame me not for what I do. It hath just reached me that my mother is dead, and my father had been killed in holy war. And of my brothers, one hath lost his life by a snake sting, and the other by falling down some precipice.' All of her family died suddenly. "And I can and should do naught save weep and lament. When I heard her words, I refrained from all reproach and said only, 'Do as thou list. I certainly will not thwart thee.' She continued sorrowing, weeping and wailing one whole year, from the beginning of its circle to the end. And when it was finished, she said to me, 'I wish to build me in thy palace a tomb with a cupola, which I will set apart for my mourning and will name it the House of Lamentations.' Quoth I again, 'Do as thou list.' Then she builded for herself a cenotaph wherein to mourn, and set on its center a dome under which showed a tomb like a Santon's sepulchre. Thither she carried the slave and lodged him, but he was exceeding weak by reason of his wound, and unable to do her love service. He could only drink wine, and from the day of his hurt he spake not a word, yet he lived on, because his appointed hour was not come. Every day, morning and evening, my wife went to him and wept and wailed over him and gave him wine and strong soups and left not off doing after this manner a second year. And I bore with her patiently and paid no heed to her. One day, however, I went into her unawares, and I found her weeping and beating her face and crying, 'Why art thou absent from my sight, O my heart's delight? Speak to me, O my life. Talk with me, O my love.' Then she recited these verses: 'For your love, my patience fails, and albeit you forget, I may not, nor to other love, my heart can make reply. Bear my body, bear my soul, wheresoever you may fare, and where you pitch the camp, let my body buried lie. Cry my name above my grave, and an answer shall return, the moaning of my bones responsive to your cry.' Then she recited, weeping bitterly the while, 'The day of my delight is the day when you draw near, and the day of mine affright is the day you turn away. Though I tremble through the night in my bitter dread of death, when I bold you in my arms, I am free from all affray.' Once more she began reciting, 'Though a morn I may awake with all happiness in hand, though the world all be mine, like Kasra kings I reign, to me they had the worth of a winglet of a gnat, and I fail to see thy form when I look for thee in vain.'" Well, This last one was really beautiful. So that word that she said, Kasra Kings, Kasra is the Arabicated version of the word Khosro, which is Persian. And it's the Persian equivalent of the Russian Tsar or the German Kaiser or the international Caesar. Thank God my neighbor's washing machine had turned off. When she had ended for a time her words and her weeping, I said to her, "Oh, my cousin, let this thy mourning suffice, for in pouring forth tears there is little profit." "Thwart me not," answered she, "in aught I do, or I will lay violent hands on myself." So I held my peace and left her to go her own way. And she ceased not to cry and keen and indulge her affliction for yet another year. At the end of the third year, I waxed weary of this longsome mourning. And one day, I happened to enter the cenotaph, when vexed and angry with some matter which had thwarted me. And suddenly I heard her say, "O my lord, I never hear thee vouchsafe a single word to me. Why doest thou not answer me, O my master?" And she began reciting, "O thou tomb, be his beauty set in shade? Hast thou darkened that countenance all sheeny as the noon? O thou tomb, neither earth nor yet heaven art to me. Then how cometh it in thee are conjoined my sun and moon?" When I heard such verses as these, rage was shaped upon my rage. I cried out, "Well away, how long is this sorrow to last?" And I began repeating, O thou tomb, be his horrors set in blight? Hast thou darkened his countenance that sickeneth the soul? O thou tomb, neither cesspool nor pipkin art to me. Then how cometh it in thee are conjoined soil and coal? When she heard my words, she sprang to her feet, crying, "Fie upon thee, thou cur! All this is of thy doings. Thou hast wounded my heart's darling, and thereby worked on me sore woe, and thou hast wasted his youth, so that these 3 years he hath lain abed more dead than alive." In my wrath I cried, "O thou foulest of harlots and filthiest of whores, ever fottered by negro slaves who are hired to have at thee." That's some aggressive language. "Yes, indeed, it was I who did this good deed." And snatching up my sword, I drew it and made at her to cut her down. But she laughed my words and mine intent to scorn, crying, "To heel, hound that thou art, alas for the past which shall no more come to pass, nor shall anyone avail the dead to raise. Allah hath indeed now given into my hand him who did to me this thing, a deed that had burnt my heart with a fire which died not, and a flame which might not be quenched." Then she stood up, and pronouncing some words to me unintelligible, she said, "By virtue of my egromancy, become thou half stone and half man." Whereupon I became what thou seest, unable to rise or to sit, and neither dead nor alive. Moreover, she ensorcelled the city with all its streets and grafts, and she turned by her gramarye the four islands into four mountains around the tarn whereof thou questionest me, and the citizens, who were of four different faiths, Moslem, Nazarenes, Jew and Magians. She transformed by her enchantment into fishes. The Muslims are the white, the Magians red, the Christians blue, and the Jews yellow. And every day she tortureth me and scourgeth me with 100 stripes, each of which draweth floods of blood and cutteth the skin of my shoulders to stripes. And lastly, she clotheth my upper half with a hair cloth, and then throweth over them these robes. Hereupon the young man again shed tears and began reciting, In patience, O my God, I endure my lot and fate. I will bear at will of thee whatsoever be my state. They oppress me, they torture me, they make my life a woe. Yet haply heaven's happiness shall compensate my strait. Yes, straitened is my life by the bane and hate of foes, but Mustafa and Murtada shall ope me heaven's gate. After this, the Sultan turned towards the young prince and said, O youth, thou hast removed one grief only to add another grief. But now, O my friend, where is she, and where is the mausoleum wherein lieth the wounded slave? The slave lieth under yon dome, quoth the young man, and she sitteth in the chamber fronting yonder door. And every day at sunrise she cometh forth, and first strippeth me and whippeth me with 100 strokes of the leathern scourge, and I weep and shriek, but there is no power of motion in my lower limbs to keep her off me. After ending her tormenting me, she visiteth the slave, bringing him wine and boiled meats. And tomorrow, at an early hour, she will be here, quoth the king. By Allah, O youth, I will assuredly do thee a good deed which the world shall not willingly let die, and an act of daring do which shall be chronicled long after I am dead and gone by. Then the king sat him by the side of the young prince and talked till nightfall, when he lay down and slept. But as soon as the false dawn showed, he arose and, doffing his outer garments, bared his blade and bastened to the place wherein lay the slave. Then was he ware of lighted candles and lamps, and the perfume of incenses and unguents. And directed by these, he made for the slave and struck him one stroke, killing him on the spot. Shit, God. And violence is the regular theme of the tale of the fisherman and the genie, and its sob stories, of course. So, so he killed the black lover. After which he lifted him on his back and threw him into a well that was in the palace. Presently he returned and, donning the slave's gear, lay down at length within the mausoleum with the drawn sword laid close to and along his side. After an hour or so, the accursed witch came, and first going to her husband, she stripped off his clothes and, taking a whip, flogged him cruelly, while he cried out, Ah, enough for me the case I am in. Take pity on me, O my cousin. But she replied, Didst thou take pity on me and spare the life of my true love, on whom I doted? Then she drew the sisal over his raw bleeding skin and threw the robe upon all and went down to the slave with a goblet of wine and a bowl of meat broth in her hands. She entered under the dome, weeping and wailing, well away, and crying, O my lord, speak a word to me, O my master, take a while with me, and began to recite these couplets. How long this harshness, this unlove, shall bide? Suffice thee not tear floods thou hast espied? Thou doest prolong our parting purposely, and if wouldst please my foe, thou art satisfied. Then she wept again and said, O my lord, speak to me, talk with me. The king lowered his voice, twisting his tongue, spoke after the fashion of the blackamoors, and said, Lack, lack, there be no majesty, and there be no might save in Allah, the glorious, the great. It's funny how the translator of this text into English tried to resemble this kind of black, talking and fashion of the Blackamoors by twisting the words a little bit. Like, instead of majesty, it's wrote maesty, or glorious, it's written gloriosa. I don't know, it's just amusing. Anyways, now when she heard these words, she shouted for joy and fell to the ground, fainting. And when her senses returned, she asked, "Oh, my lord, can it be true that thou hast power of speech?" And the king, making his voice small and faint, answered, "Oh, my coss, doest thou deserve that I talk to thee and speak with thee?" "Why and wherefore?" rejoined she, and he replied, "The why is that all the livelong day thou tormentest thy hobby, and he keeps calling on heaven for aid until sleep is strange to me, even from evening till morning, and he prays in dams, causing us to, me and thee, causing me disquiet and much bother. Where this is not so, I should long ago have got my health, and it is this which prevents my answering thee," quoth she. "With thy leave, I will release him from what spell is on him." And quoth the king, "Release him and let's have some rest," she cried. "To hear is to obey." And going from the cenotaph to the palace, she took a metal bowl and filled it with water, and spake over it certain words which made the contents bubble and boil as a cauldron seetheth over the fire. With this she sprinkled her husband, saying, "By virtue of the dread words I have spoken, if thou becamest thus by my spells, come forth out of that form into thine own former form." And lo and behold, the young man shook and trembled. Then he rose to his feet, and rejoicing at his deliverance, cried aloud, "I testify that there is no God but the God, and in very truth Muhammad is his apostle, whom Allah blessed and keep." Then she said to him, "Go forth, and return not hither, for if thou do, I will surely slay thee," screaming these words in his face. So he went from between her hands, and she returned to the dome, and going down to the sepulchre, she said, "O my lord, come forth to me, that I may look upon thee and thy goodliness." The king replied in faint low words, "What thing hast thou done? Thou hast rid me of the branch, but not of the root," she asked. "O my darling, O my negroling." Holy shit. This is actually cute in this context of story. She turned the word negro into something cute. Oh, it's unbelievable. "Oh, my negroling, what is the root?" And he answered, "Fie on thee, oh my cuss, the people of this city and of the four islands, every night when it's half past, lift their heads from the tank in which thou hast turned them into fishes, and cry to heaven, and call down its anger on me and thee. And this is the reason why my body is balked from health. Go at once and set them free. Then come to me and take my hand and raise me up, for a little strength is already back in me." When she heard the king's words, and she still supposed him to be the slave, she cried joyously, "O my master, on my head and on my eyes be thy command. Bismillah." So she sprang to her feet, and full of joy and gladness, ran down to the tarn and took a little of its water into the palm of her hand. And Shahrazad perceived the dawn of the day and ceased her permitted say. It seems like the story of the fisherman and the genie is coming to an end, although it was a very violent story with a lot of beheading and a lot of racist comments. It is coming to an end, and it's hard to decide on which side I am. I mean, with whom I sympathize the most. Because on one hand, we have the woman who is truly in love and is ready to do anything for her love, even if it's cruel and inhumane. And on the other hand, we have the racist bitch of the king, who has been also tormented for a while, and he had atoned, so to say, for his crimes. But it's good, actually, when a story is like this, that you cannot decide on whose side you are. Anyways, enough of my rambling. That was it for tonight, and sleep tight.